This is The Topic is Trek, episode 69, for Friday, June 26th, 2020. Coming up in this episode, jaywalking nearly destroys the multiverse. Jean-Luc considers taking the show on the road. We go ask Alice, all that and more, right now on The Topic is Trek. Tiny little life forms.
Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already.
Let's see, taking notes. The topic is Trek. Got it. Okay. Well, hello, everyone. I didn't see you come in or hear you come in or hi, how you doing? This is Clinton, one of your co-hosts for The Topic is Trek. And joining me as always, first up, beaming in, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Don't make me angry.
No, that's not going to work either. No.
Oh, is that already taken?
Yeah, that one's taken. I think you got to try again next time. Right. Maybe run some of these past us before the show starts. That might.
Just okay. Eat my shorts.
No. Let's see. Did I do that and introduce Chuck? No, I did not yet. And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Maltz. Joy Joe.
Did the Borg come in there?
Somewhere? Did he say he wanted a Charleston Chew? I don't. What is he at? I don't understand.
Or
what he's
a frosty
talking
cold
about.
Malt? I'm not sure.
Oh yes,
and a Charleston Chew.
Yeah, very chewy. Oh, chewy. No, I'm sorry. The topic is Trek. Anyway, well, how are you both doing this fine June evening?
I was doing okay when we started like the first three times.
Some technical difficulties.
Hey, stop breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah. Well, we already broke that wall. We're on the sixth, seventh, and eighth walls now.
Yeah, that's right. I'm doing good. How about you, Clinton?
I'm doing just wonderful. It's a lovely summer night here in the Northeast. Rather on the warm side, so doing good. Looking forward to talking about, I took a note here, Trek, because the topic is Trek. Got it. Okay. I have to have that big note there to make sure I know, but.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about the things we saw on Netflix this week. Okay.
No, Tiger King. Please.
I don't know about you, but all I saw on Netflix this week was Star Trek.
Pretty much.
Indeed. But we will talk about that much later in the show. But for now, it's time to open up our subspace chatter. Right, Charlie?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
You know, I was just hoping that just like we're going to have that talk with Craig, we could have a talk with you, Charlie, about the attitude. But we can't do that right now.
Are you going to have the talk with Charlie?
I am.
But how you're an adult now.
To do that, okay, I guess. Okay. And I don't know. It's very confusing why we have to go to the gym to do it. I don't understand. But let's get right to the news. And we're going to start off with a story that Chuck will tell us about.
Yes. Recently on the Delta Flyer podcast, co-hosted by Garrett Wong and Robert Duncan McNeil, Wong recalled a story that could have had far-reaching consequences for both the Star Trek and Star Wars franchises. Hurrying to get to his first day of work as Ensign Kim on, yes, Star Trek Voyager, spoiler alert, I think, Wong was speeding around the Paramount parking lot. Suddenly, a man stepped out in front between him and two parked cars. Wong had to slam on the brakes to avoid an accident. Then the actor looked up and locked eyes with the individual he had just avoided striking. He recognized his face. Oh my God, Kim thought. I almost killed Han Solo. That's right. It was none other than Harrison Ford. The Star Wars actor had been on the Paramount lot for Clear and Present Danger screening.
Yeah, that I think that Garrett said, you know, that that I would not have been very well loved by the Star Wars community, you know, if that had happened.
He's got to work that into his comedy routine somewhere.
Yeah, becoming something other than ensign would have been on the short list of his problems.
Yeah, you got bigger things to worry about, pal.
Well, at least it was only the screening of Clear and Present Danger. It wasn't like they were filming it and suddenly Harrison's got a broken leg or something.
Ah, I see. Well, he has to save that stuff for when he lands his plane. You know, that's when he... I want to tell you. All right, well, let's get away from the topical humor, because the topic is humor. No, the topic is Trek. So let's get to our next story from Craig.
All right. And as of June 12th, which is, you know, 12 days ago since this when we're recording this, film and television productions are allowed to resume shooting in the greater Los Angeles area, provided that they follow specific protocols, you know, X-Modem. Why don't we have any information? We don't have any information as to whether or not Star Trek Picard has begun filming on season two, but at least we know, at least now, that the productions can move forward.
Right. I did some checking, and the only thing that I found was the fact that, as you know, Patrick Stewart has been doing those reading a sonnet a day on Twitter during the stay-at-home orders. Mm-hmm. And in mid-May, he stopped doing them, saying he had this project he was working on, and he said, you should be seeing it shortly. And, you know, just going to be taking a break for a few weeks. Well, it's been a month now. So I don't know whether it's unrelated to Star Trek Picard or related to it, that all of a sudden he's found, well, I've got to get back to doing something else. But that's it. That's all I could find.
Maybe he's filming something for the end of Discovery season three. Maybe so.
He's doing a sonnet a day. That's a great idea. I should do like a poem a day. I think I'll do Ode to Spot every day. Felix Catus is your taxonomic nomenclature. Anyway.
Yes.
Every day.
Yeah. Well, I will carry on with in related news, and this is not about your relatives, but in related news to the previous story, speaking with IndieWire, Star Trek Picard producer Ava Goldsman said that the forced hiatus for Star Trek Picard had meant the writing staff had had more time to develop and perfect the scripts for season two.
Yay.
And Goldsman hinted that there may have been a rushed writing process for season one. Things that make you go,
Well, this is what we were talking about before. It's like, even though they can't film, the writers can keep writing and polishing the scripts.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, in the same interview, Goldsman said that the final conversation between Picard and Data, which we all recall from the end of season one of Picard, well, that was originally planned to last an entire episode.
Oh, my.
And the writing staff jokingly referred to the original concept as My Dinner with Data.
It should have been the title. Yeah, it should have been the title episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, just because it's not the whole episode, don't waste a good title. I don't know, maybe they can use that for something in season two.
We've got some titles of our own coming up later in the show.
Because it's you know, now they're talking about the fact that they still want to have Brent Spiner involved in season two, and that might mean that he is, you know, playing his character of Sung is back again.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
even Brent Spiner, even I think he mentioned it a couple of times that he was happy to do that, which I think he was dress dropping hints that was going to happen.
Yeah. Honestly. All right. Well, I'm sure that the next story, because we know how people go, oh, please not. I'm sure the next story will have nothing to do with Picard. Isn't that right, Chuck?
Well, you'd think we were doing this. That was our show content a year ago, so we've far outgrown that by now.
Yes.
Oh, but wait, no. One more bit of information about season one of Picard.
Not quite yet.
No.
A little bit of information was revealed by showrunner Michael Chabon in the initial pitch. Chabon and Alex Kurtzman made to Sir Patrick Stewart when the story began. Jean-Luc was not tending the family vineyard in France, as we all are familiar with seeing. Yeah. Chabon says crazy that he can't recall all the details of the story. Must have been heavy drinking going on or something.
That would be great as we put him in a vineyard.
Look, Patrick, we got this great idea.
Painting a picture and up walks the data.
The Chateau Picard's killer.
Okay, anyway, he did remember that the former captain of the Enterprise D was now a road manager for a traveling theater company.
And
that the actors were doing a performance of Samuel Beckett's Crap's Last Tape. I have this image of Times Arrow where they're in the apartment and the landlady comes up. Mr. Pickard, your rent is due.
Mr. Pickard.
Yeah, to me, it's just like, okay, how desperate were you to pitch this to Sir Patrick? It's like, how can we work theater into this quick, you know, and brainstorming on that one, you know, and that's the brainstorming. Well, he's the logical choice for Captain Picard when he leaves Starfleet is to become the road manager for a traveling theater company. Of course.
He's a roadie. He's hauling suitcases around.
He's still captaining people.
Leader till the end.
He's been arrested for trying to lure young actresses in his
Whoa, hey now. Craig always sees
together.
Craig sees the bright side of every story, doesn't
this
he?
This is my pitch for Picard.
Yeah, maybe season three. We'll talk about that later on. But you know, it's interesting when you hear sometimes these things that were initial ideas for things. And you go, man, I'm so glad that they kind of thought that one through a bit and said, nah, that's really not a good idea. We shouldn't do that at all. I don't know.
Let's start out on the holodeck. How's that?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I've got good news for everyone. The good news is that the next story that Craig is going to talk to you about is not about Star Trek Picard.
I bet it's still about Star Trek.
It is, because the topic is Picard. Topic is Trek.
So a leaked script from Picard. No, I'm just kidding.
No, what?
This just in. Because something will come in about Picard 5 minutes after we finish recording.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Actually, Patrick, I'm waiting for Patrick Stewart to come in. But yeah.
Let's wrap this up, shall we?
No, go away.
Ask and you shall receive.
Go away. Go back to the other show. Go away.
When you see a headline that reads "Why Simon Pegg was irked by being to be offered Scotty in Star Trek," you know that some website is looking for clicks. In reality, the story is simply that Simon Pegg was commenting on the way director J.J. Abrams contacted him about playing the Scottish engineer. Pegg says that Abrams sent him an email and straight up asked him, "Do you want to play Scotty, please?" I added the "please." As an actor, Pegg felt that he had unfairly been put on the spot by the question, and he thought he should take time to think about the offer. As we all know, 3 or 4 days later, he replied, "Yes!" Exclamation point. There you go. So we saved you a click.
Yeah, I found several versions of that article, and you could tell just by the headlines, which is the site you don't want to click through the headline to and which is the one it's okay to, because pretty much all the ones that you don't want to click through to had variations on, why Pegg was miffed at mm-hmm. Abrams and all this kind of stuff. Another one said, here's the interesting way that, you know, Simon Pegg was offered the role, and they just go into the
talk, so. Cause I think, I don't know if it was Cinema Bloom. I saw one of the websites and I went, irked. I thought, everything I read, he was happy about it. So I was like, I got to go look at this. And of course it was like early in the morning. I was trying to have my coffee and, you know, scroll through the lines. I'm like, why am I even looking at this? This is stupid. The title has nothing to do with what actually happened. Anyway.
Yeah. So we saved you that click, people. Although we do have a link to the article in the show notes for episode 69 over at the topic is Trek. .com. So
in case you want to click it.
Yeah, there is that. But you don't have to, because we told you the pretty much everything the article says.
And so, listener, we clicked it. so you don't have to.
And pictures of...
You just click on our site, don't click on their site.
Just don't click on the link that says pictures of other Star Trek characters. Where are they now and what happened?
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
Ooh, no.
No, you don't want that. All right, well, we don't know if we'll get this kind of access again, but right now, Star Trek celebrities are making themselves widely available for all types of online panels and interviews. One unique source of these web-based panels is Cool Waters Productions, an appearance management company that represents celebrities for conventions around the world. And recently, as part of Cool Waters' in-house con series, Derek Mackey interviewed several members of the Star Trek Discovery cast, including Doug Jones, who of course plays Saru, Patrick Kwangchun, who plays Lieutenant Reese, Raven Dauda, who plays Dr. Pollard, and Hannah Cheeseman, who plays Arium. We have a link to that panel in the show notes for episode 69 over at thetopicistrek.com, as well as some other different interviews that are being done online. One of the interesting things in that panel, I'm not saving you the click because I think you should still, you know, watch the interview for yourself, but Hannah is asked if Arium will be appearing in season two, which of course we all know where that can't happen, right? How can't be a thing? Well, she said she couldn't answer that question because, you know, the thing she said, you know, like the CBSI is watching us all. Hmm. And she's, I can't confirm it. I can't deny it. I can't say anything. Now, you could take that as no, that she's not. And that's, she just can't confirm that she's not. But I tend to find that if somebody says they can't say yes or no,
it's a yes.
Usually it's yes.
Yes.
Because if they could just straight up say no, they would say no. So
have you reached out to Cool Waters to see if you can get anybody on our show?
Well, I think that there's still money involved with this, at least as far as those things go.
$2.30. Yeah,
I'd be happy if they paid us. What's the problem?
Yeah.
All right, yeah. I'll pitch that arrangement to them and see what happens with that.
Yeah, if they say, you say, how much? And they say, well, how does $5,000 sound? And they say, well, that'd be great. When can I expect payment?
Yeah.
I have seen some really cool, I've seen a couple, lots of actors doing the cameo stuff. You ever seen those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a charge thing too. I know that Marina was doing them. And I'm not sure which other Star Trek actors are doing them.
But. I went through because I was like cameo. So it was a few weeks ago, and I just scrolled through and I was like, there's a lot of people on there. Of course, some are more expensive than others.
Yes.
But some of them are charging a modest fee. Some of them are charging well over $100. I'm like, whew.
So if you're not familiar with. If you're not familiar with Cameo, yeah, we'll get to that later too. If you're not familiar with Cameo, as I understand it, based on the advertisements that I've seen, essentially you pay a fee and the actor, I'm assuming they're all actors, but maybe they're not, but the actor... The
sports guy's in there too.
Okay, records a message that is, a lot of times is intended for you, like if you want to send something to your buddy as a happy birthday type of thing, then they'll record... essentially like a birthday greeting for that person or, you know, congratulations or that type of thing. So you're not, I don't think on Cameo you're doing an interview. I think you're just kind of basically saying to them,
yes,
this is the message I would like you to record.
Yeah. You know? I saw one from Mary Wiseman and somebody had went ahead and posted it online. It was actually pretty cute. Her cat was in the shot and she, you know, her cat's butt, more specifically, stuff like that. It was funny, and it seemed very much like her. It's cool.
Cat gets 10%, by the way. True story. Anyway, let's move on to our last story. Chuck, take it away.
Alrighty. With great software comes great responsibility. There you go, Craig. You got a T-shirt right there.
Yay!
You can say that at the beginning of the next show. FaceApp is an application that can generate highly realistic transformations of human beings. Well, it took no time at all for both fans of Star Trek and Star Wars to begin posting gender-swapped images of iconic characters from each series. Dear listener, you probably already saw some of these. Well, in case you missed it, here it is. The whole affair was given a high-profile boost when actor William Shatner tweeted a picture of Kirk's FaceApp altered image, complete with flowing blonde hair, and commented, "I do me."
Oh my.
We've included links to loads of Star Trek and Star Wars FaceApp images in the show notes for episode 69 over at thetopicistrek.com.
So I assume you guys have looked through some of these or have seen them other places.
I got one word for you. Brain bleach.
Hey, you know, Riker's kind of, hey, baby.
Yeah, as with any with the of these beard? Type of things, that, you know, it doesn't work in every situation. You know, it's an algorithm, and sometimes you get good results, and sometimes it's like, I don't know what that is, but it doesn't even look human. You know?
Well, Riker, his or her picture, however you want to say it, actually does look very convincing. There was one of Data, and I was like, that did not work at all. But then there was a couple other ones, I guess somebody did, which looked better. And of course, suffice it to mention that the women were also turned to men. So yes. We had
Dr. Crusher.
Dr. Crusher and Troy. And it took a minute, but I was like, well, I can kind of see that. Oh, and Tasha. But yeah, it's.
And Wesley was originally written to be a female character, Leslie.
What?
Yeah, in the original like Star Trek.
I didn't know that. I was not aware of that.
You gotta listen to more of the.
We just talked about it last week.
You gotta listen to Larry Nemechek's podcast more, buddy.
Okay. When you're not listening to the topic of Trek, of course.
Oh, of course.
Yes. You should do that. Yeah, and the most interesting one I think I found in there was like, I'm sorry, it looks like D. Kelly with a wig on. That's pretty much all that is. But I don't know, it's just his face didn't. Bones, DeForest Kelly.
It's
just a picture of him with a wig on. I think the software broke at that point. I don't know what was going on there.
I didn't see the TOS characters. All I'm seeing is TNG.
I included two links, well, the link to the story, and then in the show notes for episode 69 over at the topic is Trek, there are, two.
Oh, the first link. Okay.
Right. There are two links. One shows, a bunch of Star Wars, and then you scroll down and you see Star Trek people after that, including Khan at the very bottom of that bunch. So,
hey, by the way, Mark Hamill looked pretty convincing in a few of those pictures too.
Yeah. So there you go. You can, do that or create your own with FaceApp, whichever you choose to do. There you go. All right. But in addition to all those stories that we just talked about, and we talked about a wide range of things, mostly Star Trek Picard. No, a wide range of things about all sorts of stuff. There's more out there. And I'm talking about we have links to 34 more stories that we just did not have time to get to. So you can go over there and see things from listings of the different characters and favorites and all sorts of behind the scenes items, just lots and lots of things. Again, the show notes for episode 69 over at thetopicistrek.com. All right.
I'm sorry. So you're right. The algorithm broke on a couple of these. Khan doesn't even look like they tried anything. They maybe highlighted his eyebrows. He's already got the long hair.
A little mascara.
Yeah.
But am I crazy? I mean, D is the worst. I mean, is just like, no.
Scotty just looks like he got out of a Beatles convention or something. It's like he didn't even try. I think they narrowed his waistline a little bit, but
Scotty looks like somebody said, "Hey, I'm going to cosplay as Scotty." And just didn't try, really. Just put a shirt on.
You be the judge, people. You look at the pictures and tell.
It's a now, lot
before
of fun.
Before we come back from subspace chatter, we're taking a quick trip to Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
All right.
And although we don't have any new news, we've got something of important. Well, we wanted to make note of the important anniversary in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada. It was on June 10th. So we missed this one when it was fresh news. But on June 10th, 1995, Vulcan Association for Science and Trek, VAST, unveiled their iconic replica of the Starship Enterprise with the registration number of FX6-1995. Now, this unique roadside attraction weighs in at 5 tons.
Whoa.
And measures almost 32 feet in length.
Wow.
So even though the pandemic has put a hold on some Vulcan Star Trek festivities, you can always drop by for a photo op with your favorite starship. That is one big ship.
5 tons.
Maybe that includes the pedestal that it's on, because it's on a big, big, you know, stone pedestal.
Maybe. I want to see if I can get this model in, from Polar Lights.
Yeah, it's not an exact replica, and they said that they had a local welder do it, so maybe he said, I don't know how to make that shape, or I don't know what.
Yeah, that's pretty close. That's not too bad. But there, it's like, what was it? They had a parade, I think, and in the parade was a float with the Enterprise, and it looked like it was the same shape.
It was the same shape, roughly.
Roughly. There was a saucer, a couple nacelles. You know,
they took a photo of the statue and they ran it through FaceApp and they made a float. I don't know.
I think when they were designing it, somebody's internet was down.
Oh, I see.
They put a wig on D. Kelly.
Oh, poor D. All righty.
Are you still stuck on the pictures?
No, I'm done. I'm looking at the picture of the people standing in front of the space, the Star Trek Enterprise, the rough facsimile of an Enterprise.
Yeah,
that's right. That's what happens when you send facsimiles. You know, these days the blueprints got kind of a little muddy.
I wonder if they can claim that was the Enterprise B.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah.
Have you ever seen any pictures of the B?
Have I seen pictures of the B?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I've seen pictures. Yeah. Yeah, what of it? Oh, okay.
Sure, everyone hasn't. Have you?
Let's come back from subspace chatter before we get too far off topic, even though the topic is... What the?
Oh, Skype. Gee whiz.
That's the subspace chatter we keep talking about.
Yeah, exactly. No wonder Charlie doesn't like that. All right.
Cat fight.
Makes sense now.
I think he's been right all along. And it's time to head out on our main mission. Through this door, apparently. We're just going to head into the next
step
room.
Step right through here.
Either we're in a conference room or we're now out in the hall. I'm not sure which.
We're in the turbo lift.
I just see James Colley walking by.
Everybody,
so no
gather into the turbo lift with me.
But now we have to have that sound until we, you know, finish the segment. All right.
Oh, this one?
Oh, I think. Oh, there's a ride that I don't want to go on again.
I think one of our dilithium crystals is flat.
It's time to move along with our next three episodes of Star Trek: The Animated Series in our continuing rewatch of this 1973/74 classic.
It's not so much fun when you have to watch them.
Classic. It's 1973 to 1974. I remember watching these when they were first on, and I wasn't thinking we got a classic in the making here when it was on. But who knows? Maybe. I don't know. You decide. So first up, we have Once Upon a Planet, and that was written by Chuck Menville and Len Jason, and it first aired on November 3rd, 1973. Now, quick synopsis of the plot. The Enterprise returns to the shore leave planet in the Omicron Delta region where the crew once took shore leave.
Yeah, we all remember how well that went.
As with the previous visit, things go wrong when the illusion turns deadly. Well, actually, the illusion turned deadly in shore leave.
Right. That's what I said. Why would you go back to a planet that tried to kill you?
I got it. Hey. where y'all want to go? I got a great idea.
Yeah.
we were just there.
Yeah, McCoy says, I'm up for some of that. Who wouldn't want to go? I mean, you get killed?
That's good. Now, let's go to Earth in the year 2020 instead.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Now, some fun facts about this episode before we get into talking about the episode where the fun just appears. Some of the elements of Theodore Sturgeon's original idea for a shore leave episode of TOS, so he had a kind of a sequel episode in mind for that, were incorporated into this episode, including those mechanical arms that arise out of trapdoors. So some things that they couldn't do in the original series were in that script.
We had to settle for Finnegan instead.
Yeah, and this episode establishes that Spock's mother, Amanda, was fond of the works of Lewis Carroll, an interest which carried over into Star Trek Discovery.
Mm, yes, true. Yep.
James Doohan provided the voice of the planet's computer, and he used the same character voice he did for the M5 Multitronic computer in The Ultimate Computer.
It was
just straight up that same voice.
Well, let's see what it sounds like. Yeah, that sounds like it sounds like
beautiful,
Scotty.
Beautiful voice work.
Yeah,
that is talent, I tell you.
That is why you hired this guy. I'm telling you, just brilliant.
Will he do one of those messages for me for my birthday?
Well, it's a little hard for Jimmy to do one of those now, so no, he won't be.
All right, I got an observation right off the bat.
All right, let's discuss Once Upon a Planet.
Who's right, going first?
So the first thing I noticed was we're staring at this scene for a few minutes and they beam into this Bob Ross painting.
Yes.
Yeah, it was like the episode was running short and they thought, what can we do to fill time? Do we shoot another scene?
Minute.
No, we just hold on the background painting forever.
Some of the planets look like they were Bob Ross's like scratch palette where he was cleaning his brush. Yeah. It's like the artwork on this thing is really going downhill fast.
Yeah.
And then later in the episode, we have where the planet's computer was trying to learn the Enterprise, and the Enterprise takes off out of orbit, and we just see every random shot of the Enterprise that they have already done. It's like, it's around a planet. It's in space. It's going sideways. It's doing this.
It's doing a barrel run.
And then suddenly they're back around the planet like nothing happened. It's like, what?
Yeah, those are the moments I live for on this cartoon is that random chaos.
Yeah. I like how there are things that they imagine kind of show up. And there's McCoy admiring a plantation house. I'm like, what's he thinking about?
They don't build them like that anymore. And then they lose gravity. You know, the whole loss of gravity thing was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, because apparently in gravity you float.
Yes.
But you just hover without moving a muscle because the shot just shows them all in space, you know, just like above their consoles, not moving at all.
Right.
No animation to that bit whatsoever. I think the only animation was, I think Scotty was reaching for a console to the intercom to talk to somebody. But other than that, and they talked to the guy.
He did float into like a tunnel or a tube.
That's right. They talked to him. They didn't write his name down, but I believe the person he talks to who's in engineering is the one he called to in that episode where they went into the nacelles to that weird shot of all those like lightning. This is a different episode. The lightning bolts, and they have to open up the door to part of the warp core area, and he yells for somebody to open up the door for them.
Right.
I think it was that same voice, that same name that he called. So we get to see that character this time, Gelbert or something like that. At least we finally get to see that guy, because I believe that's the same.
And this is the first time that Imris. Or Mris or whatever she pronounced her name. Imris was actually had some dialogue that was worth listening to.
Right. So you get a sense of what that character is supposed to be speaking like.
And I like it. Every time she would say something, she'd always,
yeah.
You got to purr a little bit.
That's her character.
She can't get stressed, although we'll find out she can, but you know, she gives the impression that she can't get stressed out because she's just like laid back about, everything's gone terrible.
But if you close your eyes, all I can hear is like an intoxicated Lwaxana Troi.
I know, right?
Come on, Captain Picard. Brrr.
Oh, Odo. Brrr. Yes, nice.
And I felt like I kept track of, I think I caught it about 8 times when somebody said, some kind of.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And I was like, oh.
You have a new drinking game.
Yeah. Hmm. Some kind of, I'm like, well, there you go again. Take a drink.
Yeah. There is a new one of those super cuts.
Yes.
Of some kind of the problem I have with that one. The problem I've got with that one is most of them are not them saying some kind of. Some of them are a sort of. Yeah. Or sometimes they just kind of say kind of, or you know, something. Well, you know, if you're gonna if you're gonna commit to the bit, commit to the bit. Either they're saying that a lot, or you're trying to stretch it to that. So
Janeway had her fair share.
So now I'm gonna get off my soapbox now because it's very uncomfortable standing on top of it. All right.
Oh, and I did think it was also interesting that the computer was wanting to seek out its brother computers.
Yes.
And it's, I was thinking, don't hook it up to the internet.
You won't like it very much.
No.
And of course, Kirk talks his way out of everything, including with a computer that's clearly ticked off about his job. I would not want to entangle a machine that is not happy with its job.
Yeah, but, you know, he's Kirk. He's got one job and he's going to do it. That's his job.
And he makes the Kirk speech
and everything's okay.
He's either talking his way out of something or with the females talking into something.
Careful.
So do we have anything else kind or unkind to say about Once Upon a Planet, including, I don't know what Technicolor nightmare that computer center was. You know, it's like every kind of square and round thing and
a cat's eye, a giant cat's eye shaped lens that flashes at you. What kind of user interface is that?
Also, I want to know, I guess we have plenty more to say about this episode. Also, I want to know, you know, so there was no backup plan for when the person on the planet died.
Oh, just, yeah, the caretaker.
That's it.
Maybe the computer killed him.
Yeah. Yeah, and didn't send word that he's dead to anyone.
But he killed him, but he was nice enough to make a monument.
And I'm also thinking, all right, so Kirk is explaining to the computer about, well, the fact that all these people will come to the place. You don't have to go anyplace. So has no one been there since the last time they were there? Because I thought they made reference to the fact that, you know, people go there now. And it's like, well, if people were going there, then the computer would already know about that.
They were going to, that it was all in their marketing forecast, their business plan for the planet until Ryza opened up in the next sector and everybody went to Ryza instead. That's why the computer was mad.
Poor pleasure planet. So
a little
sad.
Competition. I see.
It's all in the marketing. I tell you, it's all in the marketing. And if your marketing is, we will kill you, you know, that's,
Maybe we'll go over here.
I mean, sure, they've got some terrorists sometimes on Ryza, but we'll kill you. We'll just straight up kill you.
Come to Ryza. Our computers won't try to kill you. That's their marketing plan.
All righty. Let's move on to our second episode. Can I put that in air quotes? I mean, it is an episode. But it's like episode Mud's Passion, written by Stephen Kandel, and this first aired on November 10th. 1973, and the synopsis is the Enterprise crew once again runs afoul of the incorrigible Harry Mudd, this time hawking a love potion that greatly influences Spock and the crew.
Doesn't it? And how?
Now, a fun fact in here is, first of all, that Stephen Kandel also wrote the TOS episodes Mudd's Women and I'm Mudd.
So he knows his Mudd.
He does. He knows Mudd like nobody's business.
He knows how to sling Mudd.
Well, he also wrote a third unproduced Mudd entry for the original series called Deep Mudd. So I will never know what that was about, but we don't want to.
We could come up with a whole bunch of other ones like Mudd Packed. Mudd in Your
Having
Eye.
Mudd in Your Eye, yes, right. There you go. Roger C. Carmel is the third and final guest star from TOS, who also provided their character voice for the animated series. Of course, the first who already appeared are Mark Leonard and Stanley Adams, playing Sarek and Cyrano Jones, respectively.
So, third and final. That's all they got for their guest stars.
Yep.
And all the other voices are done by the other four people.
Yeah, speaking of finals, this is the final mention. And boy, this puts a nail in that coffin anyway. The final mention of a Spock-Chapel relationship.
Well, they went out with a bang, so to speak.
Did they? Did they really, though? So this episode, you have Harry Mudd on some planet where he's hawking these
crystals,
new version of spike and flame gems or whatever, these crystals, although he just refers to them as a liquid to begin with. But later on, you got to break open the crystal to get the liquid out of it, because I don't know why you got to do that, but you got to do that. And it's a love potion. Now, the Enterprise has shown up because clearly the most important thing for the entire crew of the Starship Enterprise to do is to go pick up Harry Mudd on some warrant for his arrest.
Yeah.
And the best thing to do is to send down Kirk and Spock to get him. So it looks like he's, you know, doing a typical snake oil salesman type of bit. But Spock points out that this is indeed a trick, because the Harry has not charmed this woman. It's a shape-shifting creature, another shape-shifting creature who's in the show with Mudd. And so everybody's like, you cheat. And clearly the logical thing that happens at that point, that now Harry Mudd is being threatened by the miners. Do you beam up? No.
You Spock. Take out a phaser.
Takes out a phaser and makes a huge ditch.
Like a freaking canyon. Just one swipe.
At first it looked small, and then all of a sudden it was like huge.
Someone got their art perspective class failed that day.
Yeah. That was the first thing I wrote down. I was like, wow, he made a moat. You know,
this episode was just covered with WTF, man, all over it.
Wait, before we keep on, we didn't rate the last one. Are you going to do that at the end?
We'll do it at the end.
Okay, please. Right,
I'm sorry.
I was hoping no one would mention that.
That was funny.
Yeah, and so I've never seen them do that again. That was certainly unique, and it seems like Spock was, well, this is a logical thing to do. You just use your phaser and make a huge ditch that they can't walk across, because the dirt doesn't vaporize. It piles itself up on the far side of the ditch.
And no one's hurt by flying debris.
So that happened.
Where was that trick in Star Trek V when they met God?
I was going to say, you should pull that one out. That's an oldie but a goodie. And Spock, you know how to do that. We get back to the Enterprise, and Mudd is in the brig, but he wants out, of course.
Hey, by the way, it looked like Kirk was tucking him in at night. He flipped the lights off, like, good night, Mudd. I was like,
good night, John Boy.
Well, I think he was turning on the force field on the door, and every time they turned the force field on, the lights went dim. It's like, wow, that thing really draws the power, doesn't it?
That's what I meant. It got dark. It looked like he was like,
just, you know.
He was like, good night, Mudd. Dink.
Read me a story.
No.
Daddy, can I have some water?
No, quiet. Go to bed.
Yeah.
So, of course, Mudd tries to weasel his way out of being in the brig, and he catches on that Chapel has this thing for Spock. And so he says, yeah, try this love crystal. And of course, what's the logical thing to do? You open up the force field and take the crystal from, you know. Well,
they make the women seem really shallow.
He held out his hand with the crystals in him, I swear, it was like a D4, a D8, a D10. He's like, hey, what are you going to do, roll for love here, Harry?
I'm rolling for initiative. Oh, I've got plenty of it already. Never mind.
How about charisma? That's
kind of a metaphor for life. Just kind of roll for love and work it out.
And of course, from that point, things go horribly wrong, because, you know, Christine thinks it doesn't work on Spock, because she goes to gives him some report and falls onto his lap.
Yeah, and just sits there.
Where she stays.
That was trying to accidentally touch him.
Unwanted sexual advances.
Yeah, I'll be reporting this to Starfleet HR.
Yeah, and nothing seems to happen. So she leaves. She's all ticked off. She goes and, you know, goes back to Harry. And because Harry's gone because he took her photo ID.
And put his picture on her photo ID, but didn't change the name. So it's got Christine Chapel with his mustache.
Yeah. All that matters is I have this card with my picture on it. Doesn't matter the rest of it.
Yeah.
And apparently Christine has, she's a nurse, but she has access to the secure, you know, shuttle area, shuttle bay. And okay. So she finds Harry there about to steal a shuttle and get away. And she's threatening him. And then he takes her prisoner by reaching out his hand.
Yeah, that was a most violent scene.
I couldn't figure. She's got the weapon. She's got the advantage. She should be taking him back, and he just reaches out and grabs her hand or something, and she collapses, like a Vulcan wrist pinch or something. I don't know what's up with that.
It can happen.
I suppose
it was the dramatic music that was playing.
No, it wasn't. Anyway, back on the bridge, suddenly Spock is all, ooh, my, you know, hey, Miss Christine.
I thought it was hilarious. He starts going, I really miss, or I was looking forward to Nurse Chapel's sweet summary. What?
Whoa. Her Excel sheets. Oh.
I think I'm a little early for Ponfar.
Yeah. He checks his watch. Oh, yeah.
Of course, as Spock yells out when he finds out that, you know, Harry has taken Christine prisoner and is trying to escape to goodness knows where, some desolate planet, which makes a lot of sense. He says, you know, I love her. And we cut.
Well, everybody goes, well, yeah, it's like, well, go ahead.
The reaction is like from different people is like, you see, you know, they go, huh? What? What's that? You cut to Eric and he just like stares and goes.
best expression out of Eric's ever.
Like, I died laughing when I thought.
And you know what? He spoke for us all at that point.
Where can I get some of those crystals for my own? And he has a happy missus at the home.
Yeah. I have three hands and I want to use them.
What is
going on here? It's just,
I know Eric's reaction was hilarious, but to hear what?
Yeah. They should have like dubbed in a wait here. You say, wait, what?
What?
Do the Farnsworth. I'll have that sound captured somewhere just to make you guys laugh in the future.
Making it the awkward pause weird. And then suddenly just hear that sound.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Because
there was another reaction that I thought was funny too.
Mm-hmm.
Was Emrys was, she was talking about, they were talking about love and, oh, Spock and love or something like that. And then she goes, I can't imagine. And she was this long pause as she looked at the screen. I was like, well, is she like trying to wink, wink, nod, nod? I can't imagine.
Say no more. Say no more.
So we get, we beam down to the planet.
We do, but the crystals are broken.
Oh, yes.
And they make their way to the air vents.
Uh-huh. Where certain members of the crew.
Well, every member of the crew. Become suddenly really, really amorous.
Actually, that's where I got a little ahead of myself. That's what I was talking about after that, is when Emrys was like, I can't imagine.
And yeah. Scotty goes, well, I could. I mean.
And he did. And they did. And I'm not going to say anything about morass. There's just too many easy jokes there.
Yeah, and We get a musical interlude from Eric's at that point.
His grand guitar solo.
It's big. Yeah. he's playing. It's like all of a sudden he's got it on the bridge.
Yeah. It's like, do you have that under your seat? Where did that come from?
I keep this around for special occasions.
Oh, and so things get all out of whack.
Scotty's like sitting in the captain's chair with like one leg over the arm, all relaxed. Everybody's like chilling out on the bridge.
Can you play that song about heading out to Eden?
Yeah, yay, brother.
Yeah, brother.
In the transporter room, they've got limited cell animation of dancing going on. You know, it's just wackiness.
I think five frames.
Yeah, just like they made it from one end of the transporter controls to the other in 5 frames and then back again, the same frames in reverse.
And I had to rewind it and look at that again. Was that Kyle, by the way?
It was when you're, you know, when you're about 10 years old and you're writing, you're making your first flip page book.
Was that Lieutenant, was that Kyle?
I don't think it was. I don't think it was. I have to go back and look, but I don't think it was. I think they just, we'll just draw some random crewmen and have them doing that.
Yeah.
And down on the planet, things aren't much better because suddenly there are giant rock creatures.
I love the sound effects of those things.
And the rock creatures will threaten you and they'll come after you, but when they find you, they'll just stand there.
Yelling at you.
They totally ripped that off from Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think, wait a minute. Let me check my, wait, hold on a second. My math. No, I don't think so. Anyway.
I think they ripped it off from somebody's cat, you know, because, or, you know, the dog next door that barks, but doesn't actually do anything.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to a cat in the next episode, but we find out that there is a downside to Harry's love potion, which he's surprised to find out even works to begin with.
Yeah.
And that is that suddenly you become very, very irritable, extremely irritable.
Well, Scotty said he had a hangover that was above every hangover he's ever had,
which is probably saying a lot.
That's significant.
And then Emrys is like yelling at him and say, oh my goodness, what is going on here? And you've got Spock yelling at Kirk about stuff, and it's just it does not end well.
But prior to that, Spock and Kirk were close.
They were very close, although Spock's arm was like broken at the elbow, I mean at the shoulder or something like that. For that, they show them like with their arms around each other's shoulders, and I couldn't resist. The body doesn't move in that.
I had to send that to you when I was watching it. And I just started. That was the part that made me laugh the hardest. Like, I got to send this picture to Craig and Clinton.
Yeah. I think what happened was Kirk, he became enamored with Spock. And yeah, and then I was like, oh,
and he was jealous.
I didn't expect this to go anywhere.
Well, no, remember up front, Harry says that it because, yeah, exactly. Well, for all the KS fans out there, Harry says at the beginning of the episode, goes out of his way for this long explanation of it, saying that, you know, between man and man or woman to woman, you know, great friendship, but between man and woman. And I'm going, well, Harry, you know, come on, let's not be like that. Why do you got to be like that? But that was the 70s.
It was the 70s.
What can I tell you? So everything goes back to semi-normal at that point. And of course, Harry's going back for more rehabilitation. Wah, wah, wah. Always to make another appearance.
There was a scene. I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish. I apologize.
No. If there's something I missed in this episode that's highly entertaining, please, by all means.
I like how they cut back and they show everybody on the ship. Everybody's kind of relaxed and talking. And McCoy was talking to the lady. Remember that time I saved Spock? Oh, yeah. I saved about everybody on the ship. Then he goes, yeah. If the Enterprise had a heart, I'd save it too.
Now let's talk about your heart, young lady. Oh my.
Put that on a t-shirt.
I just thought that was funny. If the Enterprise had a heart, I'd save it too. I was like, what?
Somebody give me a mint julep.
Yeah. It's just hard to do the CPR. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Smooth talking.
I'm sorry. Now let's move on.
All right. So we will say for the moment.
Can you see Carl Urban doing that same scene?
Yeah, I think I can actually. All right. We'll move on to our last episode, the Tarantino incident.
Not the Tarantino incident.
No, that's completely different. And that probably isn't going to happen.
That's a sequel to this episode.
Probably be better.
And this is written by Paul Schneider, and it first aired on November 17th, 1973.
Oh, man, I love that guy. He was in Smokey and the Bandit, was the short.
Okay. No.
Paul Schneider? No, that's David Letterman's musician guy.
No. You know, they had to make him copies? No. Okay, anyway. When a strange flash of light paralyzes the entire crew of the Enterprise, they begin to shrink. Kirk beams down to the nearest planet, Cephas, and discovers a miniature race of descendants of a lost Earth colony, desperate to leave their volcanic homeworld.
They weren't lost, it's just nobody could find them, which I guess is the same as being lost.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. And a fun fact, the author of this episode also wrote two TOS episodes, which were actually good episodes. The Balance of Terror and The Squire of Gothos. So I don't know what happened here, but we essentially have, as the story says, that there's a shrinkage on board the Enterprise. The crew gets really, really small.
They were in the cold pool.
They were.
Well, or is the ship came from? I think the ship was growing.
Well, they pointed out that they, at first they thought that's what was the case. And I'm not sure why they first thought that was the case. You know, why would you not think you were shrinking?
In his infinite wisdom, says, or the alternative captain. Like,
oh, Spock, you are very clever.
Mm.
And fortunately, we find out that the crewman's uniforms are made out of an organic material, so it shrinks with them.
Well, that was fortunate, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
Some sort of algae-based, plant-based fabric.
Yes.
When do we get that?
Well, you've got your gold algae and your red algae and your blue algae. You know, so that's why they have the colors of the uniforms. It's whatever color algae is, that's what color the uniforms are going to be.
Are they color safe?
Yes, because it's all.
Can you wash them with the whites?
You can.
Or was it originally a green algae that was later turned gold?
That's a great question. I don't have an answer for you on that one. Did not think we were going to spend so much time on the uniforms. Very odd.
It's odd, better than the episode.
So the crew just keeps shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And since this is such a dire emergency and they need to figure out what to do, they decide to spend lots of time climbing up to Spock's console so he can punch by hopping and pushing on the different buttons so they can figure out how small they're going to shrink before they can't operate the ship.
Yeah.
If you hadn't spent all the time with the buttons and the climbing up on the cut, you'd have more time to figure out what to do. So I don't, that part didn't make any sense to me. It's like, well, take a guess, because we can't spend time doing this. We also have
we have
Nurse Chapel's falling into that aquarium
and just yells help 1,000 times.
Help!
Fortunately,
help me.
For
Rhonda.
Some unknown reason, there is a needle and thread just lying on the counter of sick bay.
Well, that's where you sew up the sutures. You make the sutures to the stitches.
You used a little wavy thing you do that with.
What's this, medieval surgery crap?
See?
Bones is an old country doctor. He doesn't use one of those skin welders. That's Crusher's deal.
No. He's all for that. He's all for that kind of thing. He doesn't like the old stuff. Didn't understand that. Didn't understand why they had these pets. All right.
Fact
the lab
was,
either.
Christine was doing cross stitch during work hours.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why did you have these
the halo fish and the transparent rats?
Yeah. Just cuz?
It added to the storyline.
Yeah, because when the rats disappear, it's like, and they're gone.
They got out.
That was it. You know, they shrunk, so they got out, and we never hear about them again. So, okay. Was there a plot part there that just kind of fell through the cracks? No pun intended.
Open storyline for a future episode.
And they didn't really say what happened to the fish, did they?
Yum, yum. Mm.
Sushi
night. They had Cookie make some sushi.
Right.
We also have Sulu just going off the deep end in this episode. Like, what is up with that? He's like, we need to fire phasers at the planet and do a thing. And it's like, hey, hold on a second here. What's going on?
He was still mad because he didn't eat crystals from the previous episode.
Oh.
Yeah. He didn't get any action on the Enterprise.
Oh, so he's taking that on that planet. You know, right. And people explain to him, well, you know, where are you going to aim it? And it's a whole planet. And to have this something, I don't care. We're just going to shoot and fire and the torpedoes and the photons and the phasers and stuff and just destroy it. Ah! I mean, that's a sense of the dialogue. I didn't, that came out of no place.
A lot of the stuff on this cartoon comes out of no place, Clinton.
Well, hey. What was funny was, you know, Kirk told everybody to go to the forward bulkhead so he didn't step on them all. And then you're right. He started getting a little crazy with the shooting and the stuff, just threatening the city. I'm like, that's not Kirk. Maybe his brain's still small.
Right. Kirk did the same thing. Kirk is like, okay, now we're going to, you know, shoot at the planet and, you know, so. Whether that was a bluff, I don't know, because he vaporized some of their dilithium crystals. So it was like, oh, good thing you're really confident about your aim. Because that was like, as far as I could tell, about 6 inches away from their city.
Yeah.
And was there any real need to threaten them? They were about to be destroyed by a volcano anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he didn't know that at the time, though, did he? I mean... And he didn't know where his crew was at that point. So, I mean, whatever action he's going to take, he's taking trying to get the crew back. It just seems like that was such a bizarre and, you know, un-Kirk-like thing, just like it was an un-Sulu-like thing, to, like, first thought, violence.
I will give the crew points for ingenuity, like the bamboo ladder they had at Con. You know, wherever they got the bamboo ladder from,
yeah,
I don't know.
That was my question. If you're gonna replicate something, why would you replicate a bamboo ladder?
Or in the transporter room, you know, you got three guys yanking on strings to move the controls.
A bamboo ladder. And let's make a ladder out of paper. How about that?
Yeah, let's get some newspaper from down in the mess hall. Yeah, that'll do it.
What's newspaper? We don't.
They just put a bunch of, just take up a bunch of data pads. Look, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they really, they didn't think this through at all. I feel like this was an episode that, and then this happens, and then that happens, and then this other thing happens, and then it's over.
Okay, I get my 10-year-old son to work on it this weekend.
Yeah, right. Well, the resolution of the episode I thought was weird because, like you said, they kind of skipped over to it, and Kirk was ordering them to fire around the thing. I was like, wait a minute, did I miss something? They're going to fire on that city? And I realized they're going to beam it in. They were loosening it. But then I thought, well, why aren't those people growing bigger?
Because they couldn't. They'd been there too long.
Right. They had said that was now their DNA or their makeup was that.
But I was still thrown away when they were talking about shooting the city again. I was like, whoa. What?
Okay. Well, what you mentioned that, but. Can you answer me still? Why were they shooting at the city? They were using the transporter. Why were they shooting at the city?
Random chaos.
Show of parrot power. I don't know.
Yeah. Here's who's boss.
No matter how much of a bully you are, there's always someone in the solar system who's a bigger bully than you.
Yeah, I
feel like there was there some mandate that Gene said, look, in this episode, somebody has to fire phasers. And I don't care who does it. So they first, well, okay, we'll have Sulu do it. And they get like halfway through that scene going, nah, that won't work. And they didn't take it out of the script. They just left it in there. He's like threatening to do it. Okay, so that we'll have Kirk do it. Okay, well, it's kind of like, you know, he kind of like threatens, but he doesn't really do it. Well, we'll have him shoot again, this time directly at the city. How about that? Oh, that's good. Okay, well, now we're set. We get everything checked off the boxes.
Editing scripts is hard.
Editing these scripts, easy.
There's nothing to take.
All right. So now comes the time. I can't believe I'm giving on a scale. We do 1 to 10, right?
It's yeah, like, we have in the past.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, it's going to make it. Okay. Scale of 1 to 10. I'll start with the first one and then we'll go around. Rating for Once Upon a Planet, I am going to give that a 2.
Mm.
Pulling up far too many things directly from Shore Leave, and then it got stupid. All right, I'm going to go to you next, Craig.
I would say Once Upon a Planet, I gave it a 3, which is not much more than a 2.
Okay. That's one more than a 2, actually.
I'm going to split the difference, and only because they mentioned, you know, foreshadow things like Lewis Carroll and whatnot. So 2.5.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that sounds about right. Averaging out to 2.5 there. All right. Next up. Mud's Passion.
We're getting harsher. Our average was around 4 when we started.
It was. Well, I think now it's like we're becoming desensitized to the uniqueness, even though we've seen these before. It's like now it's like, okay, we're not on the grind of this. You got to like sell this episodes and we're not seeing it. All right. So Mud's Passion. I'm going to ask, let's go backwards around. So I'm going to ask Chuck first this time.
I'm giving this a little boost with the humor factor, 3.5.
Okay. All right. What about you, Craig?
I gave it an 8 because I enjoyed the heck out of it because of the humor.
Wow. You gave a better humor bonus than I did.
I mean, I laughed at Kirk and Spock. I laughed at Eric's and Emrys. So yes, I was down with this episode.
All right.
Even the miners, the little wolf miners.
Oh, yeah.
And one went, hey, you can't do that.
Like, did you notice? I forget which episode it was, but when they fired up the red alert, suddenly there was like this angry rant and mob on the bridge going, hey, red alert.
Like, he's yelling. Yeah.
What is that all about? Aren't these trained officers?
Not the first time you've seen that thing on this ship, pal. All right.
Hey, by the way, just a side note, I brought this up before the show. There was a scene when the rock monster stands up and looks like it's going to attack him. And there's Chapel, Spock, and Kirk. And then there's Mud. They're all standing there looking, you know, past the camera view. And Kirk obviously has a yellow shirt and light brown hair. In the scene, when they cut to the characters, there's a red shirt guy there with darker brown hair instead of Kirk. I'm like, wait, and it's like there for like 2 seconds and they come back and then Kirk's there. I'm like,
those crystals, man, they'll make you see anything.
Yeah. And we talked about this in the pre-show and we were of the opinion that every once in a while, probably some animator went, I'll stick this in. Who's going to notice?
Yeah. Right.
You know, and the answer was nobody.
Let's see if we can get away with it again.
40 years later, I did.
Yeah. I'm sorry. All right. And I'm going to give,
what was your rating?
I'm going to give it, you know, you make a good argument, you know, I mean, strictly in the factor, I will give this, I'll be generous. I'm going to give this one, I'm going to give it a 4.
Wow.
I'll be generous there.
Wow. Oh, I thought it was much better than it was. Okay.
Well, considering what it was, you know, preceded it as a two, that's like twice as good already.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, the Territon incident. So I'm going to start with you, Craig.
I'll give this one a four.
Okay. And Chuck?
Two. And that's being generous. There wasn't much to redeem this show at all.
I think I'm going to go the way that Craig was thinking about Mudd's passion is just the bizarreness of the stuff that they were doing this episode, including things like the bamboo ladder. When if you're going to replicate a ladder, replicate a ladder. I'm going to give this one. I'm going to be generous, giving it a 4.5.
Wow. Okay, yeah. I need to review my scale. My
No, please don't, because you know,
I need to recalibrate myself.
that's part of this is, you know, different opinions give you different averages, you know, if people have different thoughts about the stuff. So, you know, Please don't. All right, we will be discussing three more episodes next time. The next one's in order, and I didn't get a chance to write them down, but don't worry, if you go to any place where the episodes are listed, you will see the three after the Territon incident. But for now, it's time to come back from our main mission and head on to our Warp Speed Roundtable special effect inserted here.
You have to be properly prepared for this part. So, step into the Atavacron. All right, that
it's agonizer.
Now. All right, so last time around, our question was, how would we know if you if it was a Vendorian impersonating you? But this time around, we've got something also themed towards the episode in particular, and that is renaming some Trek episodes with the idea that the crew is now tiny. So we're going under the premise that, you know, the what happens in the Territon incident is actually something that happens, and so how would we have to rethink the titles of episodes? I'll give an example. Say we had Star Trek II. Star Trek II would be Star Trek II, The Wrath of I Can't See You. You know, so it gives you the idea of what we've got here. So let's go as many rounds of this as we might have in us.
I don't think there's much to rename. I mean, think about TNG, The Measure of a Man.
There you go. It just happens to be a small measure at this point.
He was also in the...
We're cool now using pool. Teaspoons.
All right. You got one, Craig?
Yeah. Spock's tiny brain.
I was going to go there, but...
All right. Let's see. I'm going to go with an episode from Deep Space Nine. Really, really little green men. There we go.
I'm on a similar theme from TOS. What are little girls made of?
I didn't rename these titles, but because I couldn't think of anything good. But TNG, Ship in a Bottle.
Yes, I had that one down. It was very put nice. Down as is. Yeah.
Yes. Mine are all as is. Space Seed.
Hey, well, since we're talking about tiny people, mm-hmm. Deep Space Nine, Q less.
And of course, the classic Star Trek episode, Barbie's Dream House on the Edge of Forever, because, you know, they're small. Uh-huh. They don't have a city.
A Private Little War.
Another as is. There we go.
Another as is of the Trouble of the Tribbles. It's just now they're an even bigger problem.
Yeah, I had one I had one because they're so small now, it was going to be the trouble with tables, because they just can't. Can't get to climb up on top of them.
The food's up there. I can't.
All right. Anybody else got anything? Because I got more.
Oh, go for it.
All right. Let's see. What else have I got here? I've got, so instead of Time's Arrow, we've got Time's Sewing Needle. Instead of the Man Trap, we've got the Ant Trap. Instead of Plato's Stepchildren, Plato's Children Stepped on Me.
Oh, I like that one.
Instead of we've got a thimbleful of datas rather than a fistful of datas.
That's a good one.
Instead of the big goodbye, we've got the minuscule goodbye. The Dirt Devil in the Dark. So that was really scary for if you're very tiny. And the famous episode from Deep Space Nine, The Siege of AR.558. See, they're small now. They're small, yeah. So they can't have the big name. Okay, that's our ideas for this, but I think you now get the premise of what we were going for. If you've got any ideas for any names of episodes, could be the movies, could be any episode of the show, could be the name of the show, for all we know, then you can send it in. You can tweet us at The Topic is Trek over on Twitter, or you can leave a note over on our Facebook page for The Topic is Trek. All right. Well, that was awful little of us to do that bit, wasn't it?
Don't be so
tiny of us.
Childish. Yeah.
Such big hearts.
Okay. Well, I'd fix that heart too. All right. Let's, time to fill the lithium chamber. Yeah. Time to fill the lithium chamber and get McCoy away from us and try to warp on out of here. So you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com, where I do the Comedy Forecast podcast. I'm also currently doing a Monday through Friday show on Instagram Live that repeats on IGTV called Morning Extinction. And you can find that on my Instagram and Facebook, on Instagram and IGTV pages for Comedy Forecast. Also on Facebook that way, and MeWe and your refrigerator magnets, all over the place. And who speaks for you guys?
Go ahead, Chuck. Let's again? Keep with tradition there.
Okay, tradition, he says. You can find Craig and me over at Technorama Podcast. That is at chuckchat.com/Technorama, or just type Technorama Podcast into your favorite search engine. You'll find us around the internets everywhere. You can also find T. Morris and me. We are currently rewriting Podcasting for Dummies, working on the fourth edition. That's over at podcastingfordummies.com. And Craig, do you still have a personal site where you host anything?
Sort of.
Sort of. That means there's a domain, but it hasn't done anything.
Yeah, no, you can go to spindle.com, S-P-Y-N-D-L-E. And I have some photos, and I have some of my podcasts from the dog days of podcasting and all that stuff over there. So check it out, spyndle.com.
Or you can find the rest of my life over at chucktomasi.com.
There you go. All right. So it's time to hit the theme, boys.
Let's hit the right button this time, Charles.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red
tiny red shirt.
Mine's a little small.
Yeah, did it shrink in the wash?
It's made out of algae.
Help!
Kelp! Kelp! Kelp!
Dropping a sword needle! Ah!